It is Eric Erickson, and this is my show. Delighted to have you with me today. The phone number is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. You can always email me, eric@ewerickson.com, and you can go to ewerickson.com or find me at ewerickson all over the series of tubes known as the internet. I'm starting to get, though, hate mail from people. We got some crazy dude the other day who just decided that he needed to find me everywhere on the internet to make sure I knew that God was mad at me. It was very bizarre, but nonetheless, the rest of you, the sane people, you can call, you can email. I try to interact with people as much as I can, although lately it's been kind of overwhelming. Nonetheless, I'll endeavor to connect. I do want to talk about this. The Olympics are upon us, assuming they still go forward. But the U.S. women's soccer team lost to Sweden 3-0. They've been on a 44-game winning streak. All 22 players on Team USA at the Olympics took a knee in solidarity with the left-wing Black Lives Matter organization. And then they were beaten by Sweden. Now, I said on Twitter, I tweeted out good. And a chief of staff for the U.S. Senate, for a Democratic senator, found my tweet and commented on it that conservatives don't root for America when people use their freedom of expression to say things conservatives don't like. Conservatives don't really support America or the First Amendment, or some such like that. I said such. Actually, the conservative position and my position is when you root against America, we root against you. I don't care that you're the American women's soccer team. You root against America, we root against you. And the American women's soccer team repeatedly and antagonistically tries to lecture Americans and root against Americans and blame America first, lecture us about racism and the like. They are obnoxious about it. They have no humility about it. They want to name and shame anyone. And what's her name? The obnoxious one that Victoria's Secret has decided to go bankrupt with. She's got a Subway ad. I don't know why Subway thinks it's a good idea that they've got, what's her name, Rapone or whatever, and she's obnoxiously lecturing people about their eating choices and kicking the food out of their hand by kicking a soccer ball at them. I don't know who thought anything like that would be a good idea. But that's the advertisement that Subway decided to come up with, which is one reason, Jimmy John's and Firehouse Subs do a better job anyway. It's an obnoxious ad campaign. But she has led the team to root against America, and multiple players on background and some former players have said that she has bullied the team and is unpleasant to deal with. And the team itself tries to claim they're victims. They try to claim that they're underpaid to the men. They don't want to recognize the fact that if they were to play the men would beat them. They lost to a middle school boys team. They want to be equal and they're not. I don't have a problem rooting against the women's soccer team. I do not have a problem with it. They constantly lecture Americans, badger Americans, tell Americans how terrible they are, take a knee, drag it out, politicize it, and then they want us to root for them. I root for Americans. And America is an idea and an ideal. It's not just a nation state. And I don't know what country they think they're representing, but it's not the United States of America, because they seem to despise the United States of America. They are playing New Zealand. I will be rooting for New Zealand. The men's team, I'll root for them. I don't know what's gotten into our Olympic players, though. Generally, our team sports this year are tending to suck pretty decisively compared to other nations. But the American women's soccer team, if they are booted out at the beginning of the Olympics, good riddance. They could use some humble pie. And of course, I'm sure they will lecture the rest of us that it was our fault, not theirs. And you want to know some of the background irony here? Some of the sports commentary on it? Oh, this is going to make them mad. Some of the sports commentary on the American women's soccer team is that they're getting old. They got a new coach, and they're not very coachable. They're getting old, stuck in their ways. They're getting crushed by younger teams, but they become so iconic, you can't break up that team now. They've got themselves job security by being obnoxious, and in their job security, they're losing to younger players. Good. Good. I despise the American women's soccer team. I despise their politicization of the sport. I despise their obnoxious anti-American lecturing. I despise all of that. And I am perfectly happy to see them lose to other countries. And of course, the left will berate me for saying it, and they will hate you for saying it. But you know what? This is a team that does not like my values and does not like my country, so I don't particularly care for them. Good riddance. I feel so much better saying that. It needs to be said, though. It really does. You know what else needs to be said? Now that COVID is spreading around the country again because of the unvaccinated, naturally, you know what the media has decided to do? The media has decided to go after Ron DeSantis. Because, you know, they know DeSantis is probably the front runner in 2024. There are a bunch of rumors that Donald Trump is telling people he's going to run in 2024. I don't know whether Donald Trump is going to run in 2024 or not. What I do know is that if Donald Trump told people he was not going to run in 2024, he would immediately become far less relevant to the American political conversation. Because as long as people think Donald Trump is running in 2024, people are trying to suck up to him and get his endorsement. They're trying to get him out there on the campaign trail. They're trying to make him into a big deal again. Not that he ever hasn't been a big deal, but they're trying to keep him up there. They're trying to keep him engaged. They're trying to connect themselves to him. The moment Donald Trump says he's not running in 2024 is the moment his relevance begins to recede. Very rapidly after 2022, all eyes are on people like Ron DeSantis, Nikki Haley, Josh Hawley, Tom Cotton, and a number of others who are going to run in 2024 if Donald Trump doesn't run. So he's got to keep it up. Donald Trump wants payback in 2022. Donald Trump wants to go after people like Brian Kemp in Georgia, Liz Cheney in Wyoming, and others who he didn't think either had his back enough or supported impeachment in Congress. And if he says, well, I'm not running in 2024, suddenly his clout in 2022 begins to diminish. He's got to keep it up. Maybe he will decide to run. Maybe he will. He'll be, I think, slightly older in 2024 than Joe Biden was running or than Joe Biden is now. I don't know whether he'll actually want to do that or not. But he can't tell people he's not running if he wants to stay relevant. He knows how this works. I don't know whether he'll run or not, but I know he's not going to tell people that he's not and have that risk his relevance. What I also know is that Ron DeSantis is going to run, and DeSantis seems to be it's very interesting to me that DeSantis is not coming under a lot of attacks from Republicans right now, and I expect that to happen. What is happening, though, is that DeSantis is coming, the Democrats are coming for him, and they're trying to make it all about COVID. Now, here's the thing. When you look at the data in Florida, overwhelmingly, the data in Florida shows Democrats and Republicans alike actually like DeSantis. DeSantis actually has bipartisan support in Florida. Democrats and Republicans alike like DeSantis. Black voters in Florida is like 50-50. Black voters in Florida like Ron DeSantis. Hispanic voters in Florida is like 55-45. They like Ron DeSantis. And the media knows headed into 2024, they're still convinced Florida is a swing state. It's not really anymore. And they know they got to rough up DeSantis now, not just for 2022, but for 2024. And DeSantis gets the game. He understands. And DeSantis is firing back, first of all, with his endorsement of COVID vaccines.
So here's, I think, the most important thing with the data. If you are vaccinated, fully vaccinated, the chance of you getting seriously ill or dying from COVID is effectively zero. If you look at the people that are being admitted to hospitals, over 95% of them are either not fully vaccinated or not vaccinated at all. And so these vaccines are saving lives. They are reducing mortality. Mortality in nursing homes, since we rolled out the vaccines in December, is down over 95% due to COVID. Mortality for elderly people, since we rolled out the vaccines, is down nearly 90%. And so we're proud in Florida that we put seniors first on that because they were the most vulnerable. We have 85% of our seniors that are vaccinated and about 75% of folks over the age of 50. We have no mandate. We've provided information to people, and we've been very honest about any data that comes out. And I can tell you that if you look, you are seeing people that are vaccinated. For whatever reason, some, I think, can test positive if you're vaccinated. But they don't get seriously ill, except maybe rare instances. There's always one-offs on stuff. But I can tell you in Florida, your chance of surviving if you're vaccinated is close to 100%. And so we've worked very hard to get those vaccines into all our elderly communities and give it to other folks who could use it. Obviously, when you talk about some of the younger folks, the uptake has been less. I think that the distribution was very effective that we did. And I think we had a lot of good uptake on the Johnson & Johnson in March and into April. We saw a noticeable decline in J&J when they pulled it back because of the FDA. I think it was a huge mistake. I said so at the time. And I think that sent a message that maybe this is not something that that they should be doing. I think that's been unfortunate because I took it. I think it's effective.
So you've got DeSantis, the governor of Florida, coming out in favor. Interestingly enough, I've seen some Trump supporters criticize him for saying nice things about the vaccine. You know, there are always the vaccine skeptics out there who get mad when people disagree with them. But then DeSantis made the left mad because DeSantis is not in favor of going back to mask mandates.
But that is what we're seeing. So, yes, and I said this a couple months ago. I said, told people to get vaccinated because we have a summer season here, just like last year. It started a little later this year. So you're going to have higher prevalence for the rest of July, probably into August. And then it goes back and goes the different waves. If you're vaccinated, those waves are not going to impact you in any significant way. And I think that's the important message for people. I get a little bit frustrated when I see some of these jurisdictions saying, even if you're healthy and vaccinated, you must wear a mask because we're seeing increased cases. Understand what that message is sending to people who aren't vaccinated. It's telling them that the vaccines don't work. I think that's the worst message you can send to people at this time, because I think that the data has been really, really good in terms of preserving people, saving people's lives, reducing mortality dramatically. And I can tell you that you're going to end up having over 95% of folks that end up seriously ill from this point on are going to be people who are not vaccinated. And so that's the single most important thing that people can understand. And I understand the folks who, when we first rolled this out, oh my gosh, it was like the new iPhone times 10. I mean, I'm going down to nursing homes. I would go to senior communities. They were so happy, these seniors. There was not a demand problem. It was a supply problem. And as we got more and more, we did millions and millions of seniors. And we're really proud of that. As you got into the general public, particularly under 50, the interest in it was obviously not as intense. And so we've done a lot of people. We've done millions of people who are under 50 as well. But you're in a situation now where a lot of the folks who are not taking it, it's accessible to everyone, they have different reasons for why they don't take it. And I think that the more they're hectored by government officials or some of these folks, that is not gonna get them to yes. I can.
Amen and amen. Now, here's the thing. I wanted to play both of these clips and I realized they were a little bit lengthy. But DeSantis is playing this very wise. He knows he's in the spotlight. He knows they're looking to trip him up. He knows that right now he is the contender for 2024. He's been blamed every which way by the national media. None of it stuck with Florida voters, but right now it's not about Florida voters anymore. It's about national voters. The Florida voters are increasingly locked in with him. It's the national voters. And he's got to come out and he's got to say, get the vaccine. But he's very, very adamant that the left is also overplaying their hand with mask mandates because you're taking away incentives for people to get the vaccine by telling them get the vaccine and you still got to stay shut down and keep a mask on and the like. He's playing it very smart. And the fact that the media has turned back to him to blame him for stuff, and they're ignoring Democratic governors. You know, in New York City, only 43 police officers in New York City have had the vaccine. Where's the media outrage about New York City and what de Blasio was doing to get the law enforcement folks there to get vaccinated? Where's the, you know, it's spreading again in New York City. In fact, in New York City, the virus is spreading more rapidly than in any part of Florida. Where is the coverage of New York City? See, we're going to do this again where they're going to go after a guy like DeSantis. And by the way, the numbers for Florida aren't that bad compared to places like California and New York. But yet again, he's getting overwhelming blame. He's smart enough to know that and to push back. And thus far, he's been saying the right thing. I continue to be impressed with his ability to push back against overwhelming media negativity against him. Hello, welcome back. It is Eric Erickson. Y'all, this is kind of funny to me. The Los Angeles Times is finally starting to get a clue. I've been telling you guys about this, and a lot of people have been dismissive of it. But it's true. The push for electric cars, the electricity's got to come from somewhere. It can't come from solar power and wind farms because sometimes the sun doesn't shine and sometimes the wind doesn't blow. You got to have nuclear power or coal burning power or hydroelectric, and not everywhere is a place where you can have hydroelectric. So what do you do? But then what do you do about the lithium batteries because they pollute? The the Los Angeles Times, I want to listen, play you this. This is a preview, a video preview of their in-depth reporting. California. Oh. Hang on a second. That was unfortunate. Rerouted my audio. Here we go.
It's been pushing the world toward electric cars for decades. By 2035, you won't even be able to buy a new gas-powered car in the state. But more electric cars means more heavy-duty lithium car batteries. And creating enough of them could be causing its own environmental crises.
I'm Evan Halper. I'm a national reporter at the Los Angeles Times. I've been examining the challenges created by the transition from oil to millions of mineral-intensive lithium batteries. The pace of that change is evident as charging stations are rapidly deployed nationwide, including at this former gas station in the Washington, D.C. area that has now gone fully electric.
I went to San Diego to find out about a proposed way to get materials needed for all these electric car batteries, scraping the seafloor.
We have to be bold and we have to be prepared to look at new frontiers because climate change isn't something that's waiting around for us to figure it out.
But marine biologists warn that this alternative to mining the land could be catastrophic in its own right.
When you drive a 300-ton mining machine across the bottom of the oceans, it could cause the elimination of entire species.
Other companies, like Lithium Americas, are looking to boost the domestic supply of lithium and other materials critical to batteries by digging massive new mines on public land in places like Nevada. So will California's electric car revolution be trading one environmental crisis for another?
I can't believe they're actually delving into this. And the answer is yes. Yes, it will. Are there trade-offs? Yes, there are. But good on the Los Angeles Times for at least pointing out that there are some serious trade-offs here. So I'm kind of excited about this. In a couple of weeks, I am bringing my dad, both of my brothers-in-law and my cousin over to a Braves game. Now, I'm getting my dad and one of my brothers-in-law is going to ferry him over on Delta. And so I took care of their tickets. Got my dad staying at the Omni at the, right there at the Brave Stadium. And then my brothers-in-law and my cousin are all staying at the Renaissance, which, for those of you familiar with the TP, there's a pedestrian bridge that goes across 285 on the north side of Atlanta that you can walk across from the Renaissance Hotel into the Battery there. And so they'll stay there. It's a bit much for my dad to walk that far. So I got him at the Omni. I'll stay with him there. My sisters are texting me during commercial break and they are concerned with the rise of COVID. One of my sisters works for a company in that does a lot of prescription management for nursing homes and the like, and is saying that they're starting to see COVID spread to vaccinated people inside nursing homes. What is notable, though, about that, and it was something I wanted to comment on even before she wrote, and they're just concerned with my dad traveling. We're not going to not talk my dad or we're not going to be able to talk him out of coming. He's coming. So he'll be totally fine on the planes, totally fine in the airport, and he'll be fine. But what is notable is, have you noticed there isn't a story out there about senior citizens in nursing homes dying of the Delta variant? Now, part of this, and I don't mean to be morbid or crass, but part of this is so many seniors died of COVID in nursing homes that those who didn't are fairly healthy. And I hate to say survival of the fittest, but to some degree, that's what we're dealing with there. But now you've got the more easily contracted Delta variant, and younger people are getting it, and it's starting to impact people who had the vaccine. But what we're seeing is that they're surviving, and in most cases are just fine, that they're not having the massive impact. In fact, I just got a text from someone during the break who was saying that they know someone who has gotten COVID, who is now on a vent and was not vaccinated. And before they put the person on the vent, urged the family to get vaccinated. Now, we're not going to stay on the subject, but it is notable. I think there's an increasing concern. People are starting to pay attention to this. And it goes back to my prior point on the Republicans. The reason Republicans are so often now telling people to get vaccinated is because they know that they can't really pursue their agenda if everybody's focused on COVID. It's hard to have a conversation about inflation or crime or the economy when the dominant conversation is inflation or is the virus. But there are conversations to be had. Like, for example, Gavin Newsom is inviting the world's homeless to California. He's under a recall election, and he is totally willing to have people move to California. This is from the Washington Examiner. California Governor Gavin Newsom pledged to house and feed the world's homeless population this week during a whirlwind comeback California tour that's designed to stave off a September recall by angry voters. The Golden State is already cracking under the weight of the nation's largest homeless population and one of the worst economic climates post-COVID-19. With millions of middle-class residents and business owners fleeing to red states, those left behind have seen a burgeoning lower class emerge. Gasoline is pushing $5 a gallon. 18 million homeless pack into all the blue cities, and dilapidated freeways are strewn with trash. Even The Atlantic outlined the hostile economic environment in a lengthy article titled, "The California Dream is Dying." It's against this backdrop that Newsom held a press conference Monday, pledging $12 billion to combat homelessness on top of billions that have already been spent. People will be taken care of, and anyone who wants to avail themselves of the California Dream is welcome, he said in response to a reporter who asked whether he expected the nation's homeless to descend upon California. It's about getting people off the street, out of incidents of crisis, and meeting people where they are, and to the extent that people want to come here for new beginnings at all income levels, that's part of the California Dream. We have a responsibility to accommodate and enliven and inspire, and the California Dream is alive and well for those who can afford it. I mean, that's the underlying statement here, is it not? Not everybody can afford $5 a gallon for gas. I mean, it's one of the achievements of the Biden administration, how quickly they were able to get gas prices to rise, which is just a tax on the poor. And now in California, you got people who are leaving the state and taking their bad ideas with them. Although, you know, this is one of the points missed. A lot of people in Texas, people looked at Ted Cruz barely beating Beto O'Rourke in 2018. Like, what the heck is happening with Texas? And then they failed to pay attention to what happened in 2020. Did you know? This isn't my opinion. This is actually fact. In Texas, the recent immigrants into Texas from other states were more likely to vote Republican than the existing longtime Texas residents. It is the Texas urban and suburban white people who are native Texans who are drifting left, while the immigrants into Texas are coming for the Texas dream. The incoming residents to Texas are more likely to support gun rights, are more likely to support constitutional carry, are more likely to support keeping Texas's state tax structure intact. It's the native Texans in urban areas who are now more likely to be for abortion rights, more likely to be for gun control, more likely to be for higher taxes, more likely to be for marijuana legalization, all these sorts of things. And it's the immigrants into Texas from places like California that are keeping Texas conservative. But now you've got more and more people in California who are realizing they got to leave. Now, those people, though, they're not going to Texas. They're going to places like Colorado. The liberals want some relaxed hipsterville. And Colorado, my goodness, if you've never been to Colorado, Colorado is relaxed. Now, I love Colorado. Colorado is a beautiful, beautiful state. And there are some wonderful conservative enclaves. Colorado Springs, for example, a great conservative enclave in Colorado. But then you've got Hipsterville and Boulder and the like. But it's a beautiful state, y'all. Colorado is a gorgeous state. Ironically, one of the other places a lot of the liberal hipsters are moving is Utah. I know! Utah. They're moving to Utah. They're moving to Park City. They're not moving to Salt Lake City. They're moving to Park City. They got the skiing. They got the millionaires. It's a beautiful place. I've never been. I got a buddy of mine lives down in South Georgia in Thomasville, and he goes to Park City skiing. Constantly. I've never been snow skiing. I've never been. At my age, there's no way I want to even attempt it. I'm sure I would die. I would at least break a bone for the first time in my life. I just have no desire to go skiing. I've got friends of mine who go all the time. They go to Colorado. They go to Lake Tahoe. I got a nephew who runs a ski resort out in Colorado. I've never been snow skiing. I kind of wanted to at one point in my life, and now I'm like, you know, I'm a klutz. I've never done it before. Surely I will die. So what I want to do is just go hang out and drink and watch the other people die while they're skiing. But that's just me. Nonetheless, the hipsters of California are moving to the ski joints of Colorado and Park City, Utah, and they're leaving behind a bunch of people who can't afford $5 in gasoline. Gavin Newsom can say the California dream is still working, but it's working for fewer and fewer people than it's ever worked for before. And if you speak up about it now, the wokes have so taken over parts of California. Like, take, for example, San Francisco. You're now attacked as a racist if you fret about crime in San Francisco. I was trying to explain to my kids the other day, and it kind of broke their brain to a degree, which, by the way, I need to note as an aside. This is completely tangential. I started my program, for those of you listening on delay, I started it live at 12:06 p.m. today. At 12:30 p.m., my children were just waking up. I have officially become the father to teenagers. I need to mark the occasion. Now, back to this, talking to my kids the other day, I was explaining how my oldest saw a headline about crime going down in California, and she's wondering how is California able to reduce crime? And I was explaining to her, and it's truthful, it is true. What California has done is California has decided to decriminalize a bunch of stuff and not enforce other crimes. And that's how they've got crime to go down. So, for example, in California, it is no longer a felony to shoplift less than $900 worth in goods. And the police are no longer even arresting people for shoplifting. Therefore, shoplifting has gone down in California. People aren't getting arrested. It's no longer a felony, so the crime's gone down. In San Francisco, they're not arresting for assault. If it's battery, they're arresting. If it's just assault, they're not typically arresting people in San Francisco now unless serious harm is done. And as a result, assaults are going down in San Francisco. Never mind that they're actually on the rise. More and more people are being abused on the streets of San Francisco. It's just the abusers are not getting arrested unless they're white people. If they're non-white people, the DA there is letting them go because they are reacting to white supremacy, according to the DA. So crime is going down on paper in California while it's skyrocketing in reality. But remember, in postmodernism, the critical theorists out there believe that words shape reality. Words shape reality. Reality doesn't exist. Words exist. And you change reality by changing the word. So in California, they've legalized a lot of crimes, which causes the crime rate to go down. And that's how they've solved their crime problem in San Francisco. It is a bizarre bit that's happening, but it really truly is happening out there. And I'm just flabbergasted by the whole thing. California is becoming a third world failed state. And you know what? The odds are Gavin Newsom is going to survive the recall. Gavin Newsom is probably going to survive the recall. Why is he going to survive the recall? Because California has seen so many of its conservative residents leave the state and move to Texas. They are increasingly a bright, bright blue state with very little alternatives out there. Now, you've got the different Republicans running out there. Larry Elder, I see, was able to get back on the ballot. The odds are he's not going to win. Newsom's going to survive the recall more likely than not. The passion, if it's on the Republican side, maybe they can overwhelm the Democrats and pick him off. But there, it's no sure thing for the Republicans. The odds are still in Newsom's favor. And you know what? California deserves it. They do. They get the government they elected. They deserve that. You know what you deserve? You deserve the Eden Pure Thunderstorm. The Eden Pure Thunderstorm is a portable air purifier. It does not have a bunch of filters. It is filterless. You just wipe it every once in a while. It plugs into the wall. It can use a USB cord and plug in your car. The thing works. It gets rid of odors. It gets rid of mildew. It gets rid of mold. It just works. I have them in my house. I love them. And right now you can save $200 on a pack of three. Here's what you do. You go to EdenPureDeals.com. The website is Eden, E-D-E-N, like the Garden of Eden, EdenPureDeals.com. On the front page, you will see my name, Eric Erickson. And when you click it and you jump through, you will see you can get the three pack. And now put it in your cart. Because look, right here, the price is going to intimidate you at first. You're like, what? But put it in your shopping cart. Put it in your shopping cart. And then once it's in your cart, you click the orange checkout button and you'll see a box for a discount code. Don't immediately use like the Apple Pay and stuff. You got to go through to the checkout page where you see the discount code. Use the discount code ERIC3, E-R-I-C-K and the number three, no space, ERIC3. Don't write out the word three, just the number three, ERIC3 in the discount code and poof, $200 taken off right then and there. Right then and there, $200 taken off. You get three Eden Pure Thunderstorms. You save $200. It's such a good device. It's well made and it works. Go to EdenPureDeals.com. The discount code is ERIC3 at checkout. You can clean up the air in your house and you know you can get three of them. So you can do the basement, you can do the first floor, you can do the second floor. Maybe if you don't have a basement, you put one in your car or your office. EdenPureDeals.com. The discount code ERIC3. Hello there, it is Eric Erickson here. The phone number is 877-973-7425. I'm scanning news headlines right now, and I just saw this from my buddy Guy Benson, and it's striking. This is a tweet originally from Chrissy Clark, who's a reporter at the Daily Wire. Fairfax County Schools sent teachers a PowerPoint presentation that tells them how to implement critical race theory in their classrooms. The presentation is meant for teachers only and explains how to implement a slew of left-wing political buzzwords into the classroom. Culturally responsive pedagogy, concepts and examples. This resource was written to be a teacher-facing item. The concepts support the discussion and work related to social justice and culturally responsive education. Critical race theory, the definition. A theoretical and interpretive framework that examines the appearances of race and racism across dominant cultural modes of expression. In adopting this approach, critical race theory scholars attempt to understand how victims of systemic racism are affected by cultural perceptions of race and how they are able to represent themselves to counter prejudice. Application examples. In the field of education, critical race theory is a helpful tool for analyzing policy issues such as school funding, segregation, language policies, discipline policies, curriculum, pedagogy, assessment, and accountability procedures. That's right. Also, they've got to read the Southern Poverty Law Center's Ending Curriculum Violence thing. The authors claim the curriculum can be violent even if it's not an educator's intent. And it also has embraced an anti-racism education. This is happening in your schools, even though they deny it. It happens in your schools. Now, I did something. I did something I think very interesting. On Twitter, I noted that overwhelmingly, it is college-educated white people who believe there is systemic racism in the United States. College-educated white people are more likely to believe that there is systemic racism in the United States than black people, Hispanic people, Asian people, or any other demographic group. And so I said in my tweet, what if it's not systemic racism that's the problem, but it's college-educated white people who lack the humility to understand they don't know everything? And what is surprising to me and is helpful in proving my point are the number of college-educated white people replying to me that, well, of course they understand their systemic racism because they're better educated and more worldly and have been traveling more than other people. In other words, proving exactly my point that when the college-educated white person says there's systemic racism and the black person, college-educated or not, says there is not systemic racism, and the college-educated white person says, well, you know, I've traveled more than you, I've seen the world more than you, so I know better than you. That kind of proves my point. The problem is not in this country's systemic racism. The problem is college-educated white people who don't have enough humility to understand they don't really know everything, nor do they really understand how the world works. But you can't tell them that because they'll lecture you that they have worldly experience. I think they're proving my point with the tweet. All right. When we come back, we got to move on. In addition to the mask mandates that people are considering, there's actually, I was surprised it was CNN saying this, the Biden team is fretting that the end of the Biden administration is nigh. We may be ending the ability of the Biden administration to get anything done in Washington, D.C., and we should explore their lament.